Hello, everyone. We've added this note to the beginning of all of our original episodes of the podcast to let you know of a few changes that have happened around here and hopefully avoid any confusion for you as listeners. When we began this podcast, it was called Starseed Survival Guide, and most people called me, your host, by my birth name, Erin. Throughout the first 22 episodes, you'll hear me introduce myself as Erin, hear others refer to me as Erin, and hear many references to the name of the show being Starseed Survival Guide. In 2018, more and more folks began calling us Yaya, and in March of 2020, we changed the name of this podcast to Earthside Survival Guide to more accurately reflect our intentions for the show. For a little more of the full story of what these changes mean to us, please check out episode 23, a temple talk where we reflect on where we've been, where we are now, and where we're going. We thank you for your patience during this transition, for listening and sharing this journey with us, and most importantly, for allowing us to continue to grow and evolve. Blessings.
And as I call in the east, I walk into the stream, and as I call in the south, I bring water to my mouth, and as I call in the west, the creek swallows my chest, and as I call in the north, I am swallowed by her soul.
Greetings, Starseeds, and welcome to the Starseed Survival Guide podcast. I'll be your host, Erin Rivera Merriman, and I'm honored to facilitate a place for us to virtually gather to be seeded, activated, and germinated by the infinite well of galactic and terrestrial wisdom that is available to all in every moment. Thank you for hearing the call, for remembering that there is so very much more to life and showing up to explore the secret, esoteric, mystical, and unorthodox pathways to liberation that are and forever will be open to you and all who seek them with sincerity. We welcome and hail to the guardians and the gatekeepers who dwell eternally in the liminal realms. We humbly beseech your assistance today in opening these portals between the dimensions so that those who have tuned in with this transmission may find themselves able to listen from a deeper place and receive the hybrid medicine and restructuring that the helper spirits who called this broadcast into being so generously provide. May you as sacred listeners hear what you need to hear and discard anything that is not of value to your own stated intentions for your life and the fulfillment of your soul's purpose in the most enjoyable, most beautiful possible way. Starseed Survival Guide is a listener-supported program, and we hope that if you find value in the experience we share here today, that you might consider offering support by visiting us online at www.activeculturefamily.com and making a purchase or donation. Many blessings to you on your journey, and we hope you enjoy the show.
I'm here today with founder of Dilse Spirit School and pillar of the local movement community, Kirti Srivastava. Kirti uses creativity and spirituality to ignite access to Source Divine. A dancer, yogi, and educator for over 20 years, she looks to connect our human existence to our spiritual calling. As a first-generation American, Kirti weaves constructs of race and identity into her spiritual work, resulting in deep conversations around appropriation, patriarchy, and the responsibility of human beings on this planet. She currently works as a yoga philosophy teacher, promotes peace through self-love as a personal trainer, integrating mindful fitness, brings arts and spirit into school culture as an educational consultant, and facilitates individual and group energy healing practices through breath, sound, and movement as an established movement medicine practitioner here in San Diego, California. Welcome, Kirti. We're delighted to be speaking with you today.
Hey, welcome. Namaste. Good to meet you and see you. Thank you so much for having me on this beautiful podcast.
Well, I'm excited to hear what comes out because you do so many amazing things, but I thought I would try starting to keep it light. I'm not great at keeping it light, but what's your astrological sign, either in Western or Vedic or both?
Well, I am a Virgo with a Libra rising, and my ascendant is an Aries.
Juicy.
Quite.
And how do those qualities show up in your life?
Well, I think that the Virgo tends to encourage me to work on my obsession with perfectionism. And so I tend to have to navigate a lot of that, especially as I've gotten older. I've seen how my drive to be a perfectionist and to be appealing to others, really trying to reprogram and recode that in my being to more of an honoring of who I naturally am and my purpose on this planet. And I guess if I was to even get in deeper to that, I believe the Libra moon really helps me sense the balance of wanting to be a perfectionist, but also appealing to the natural beauty and flow that I possess. So I feel that it's kind of a requirement for my Virgo. I'm really lucky to have the Libra moon. And then because I tend to be such a pacifist and such a people pleaser with the Libra and the Virgo, the Aries helps me kind of not get run over too much, or it helps me feel when I'm not resonating with maybe my true spirit. And so the Aries will kind of light the fire under my ass to question and constantly question things and make sure that I'm also blazing trails and paths for others to feel comfortable in that as well.
Amazing. Thank you for that description and window into your temperament. I always really enjoy hearing not just like who you are, but where you've been and how you got to your present place in, you know, the universe. So I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your upbringing, like where you were born and what the culture of your household was like with your family and what some of the challenges that you faced in early life were.
Okay, I'm going to try to be as succinct as possible in that response, because I think that's really the foundation of who I am today. So I was born in Chicago. My parents immigrated here about 46 years ago from India. And my sister was born there, and my brother and I were both born in Chicago. And I moved from Chicago to Santee, San Diego area, when I was about 7. And the culture of my home has always been India at home and America outside of the home. Mm-hmm. You know, where my mother really honored and held on to our culture, my father really wanted us to assimilate into American school, American culture and upbringing, because what they saw as immigrants was pretty clear. It was like, you know, it was kind of at that time of like, you know, speak English. And if you spoke something other than English, how would that be interpreted? How would that be received? But my mother was always about honoring our culture and our lineage. And in fact, she wore traditional clothing and continues to wear traditional clothing every single day today. So I think that for me, that was a big indicator for myself too, is like at home, I had to be one personality. And then at school, I would be another personality. On top of that, you layer growing up in Santee, which was definitely different. It's grown and transformed since then. But at that time, you know, the nickname was Clanty. Had quite a white supremacist vibration around it. And I was the only Indian kid growing up, you know, all the way through high school. I think my senior year of high school, there might have been maybe one or two other younger Indian kids that have moved into Santee and were going to the same high school as I was. So that was a big part of my existence and my being. That being said, the circle of friends, I always seem to attract a certain dynamic of women around me. And I've been really doing a lot of that work today. And as I try to like retrace and go back through my childhood and see like, is this just, am I this way now because it's cool and it's acceptable as an adult? Or have I always been this way? And I'm always constantly searching for like the seeds of the why. Where did this come from? Where is this? Is this ancestry? Is this, you know, a current effect from the political environment we're in? Where is this coming from? But I have to say, I've always attracted a strong tribe of women around me, no matter where I've been. And that tribe of women has never reflected one race, one spiritual background. You know, if it's always been a collection of unique, dynamic personalities, and we've always been exploratory in lots of different ways. And so I think that being in Santee, I still found a safe haven of people around me. And believe it or not, I think a lot of the white supremacist theory of the Aryan race kind of also kept me safe. Like, I was seen as a brown person, but those folks who were actually hardcore skinheads or KKK folk, they also kind of saw the roots of my heritage as, you know, the Aryan and the swastika actually is a really beautiful meaning. But in a lot of ways, it was like anyone who was like hardcore deep in it wasn't necessarily messed up towards me if they actually figured out that I was like Indian from India, South Asian, not Middle Eastern, like Bin Laden or Saddam Hussein or like Mexican or a mix of any other kind of brown. So that kind of kept me a little bit safe too. And in fact, in high school, I kicked it with a lot of skinhead guys that I didn't even really, you know what I'm saying? Really, it was like, it was a real window into when people really get to know you, all that shit falls to the side.
Mm.
You know, that's all just language and meaning making and passed down bullshit that when people really get to know each other on a heart level, it just crumbles to the side, mm-hmm. you know? And so they actually saw me beyond my skin color, I feel. And I could see them through, you know, the pedagogy that they were just passed down, that was just passed down to them. And we actually became friends. Wow. And not until some incidents when I was in college that I heard that they were involved in, did I come back home. And, you know, when they tried to kick it with me, I told them that this friendship actually can no longer exist because I'm not okay with beating up Black people because they're Black, you know, and I don't know what in them tells them that I would be okay with that. And that was had to be our parting ways, you know, probably also because I dated a white guy in high school that might have made me a little bit more safe. Wasn't necessarily totally out with, you know, who I am sexually and all of that. So, you know, I probably fit into some template of a boss for them and for their safety of them feeling safe around me. But, you know, then I went to college in Santa Cruz, which was a beautiful experience. That's when I really got to explore who I was outside of my household, outside of this duality of Indian at home, American at school. Then I went away to college in nature. And that was where I found, I really think, the foundation of who I am, because nature helped me see creation, this diverse display of plants, like being in school where there's redwoods and ocean and cliffs and it all coexisting together. And then going to school in an environment where different ecosystems are happening and then different kids from different neighborhoods are going to school, studying what they love. And at that time period of your life, you know, you're really, I think, acting out and moving forward on the journey of creating the path. You know, your early 20s is really about, you know, your teenage years is about seeking approval, seeing where you belong. What do you have to do to change yourself to belong? And then I feel like your 20s is like creating, like solidifying that. You start to solidify. And so for me, constantly wearing masks in college, I really got to just blossom. And being in nature was huge. I worked at an arboretum as a part of work study and just getting into nature and, you know, spending days making trails and pathways and pulling weeds and planting exotic plants and taking care of nature was huge for me. And I didn't really, you know, I went to school thinking I was going to be a science major because that's what you do as an Indian. You go into like, you become a doctor, you know, or an engineer. And so I thought, okay. And I surfed in high school. And so I thought, okay, I'll go be a marine biologist. Like I could study the ocean, but I could still be a scientist. But once I took organic chemistry, I was like, what is this? Am I working so hard studying? and I'm alone in the library studying my ass off, and I go take an exam and everybody's proud of getting a C, and my Virgo was not okay with getting a C after that hard amount of work. And I quickly started to realize that I'm not one to be studying in a library alone. If I love nature, I love being around people, I need to find that, what is going to allow me to do that. And so I went from like marine biology to then I became a sociology major. I then, because I thought it was still like social sciences, right? So I could still like pitch that to my parents. And then I became political sciences because I was like, oh, okay, wait, this deals with kind of like, you know, politics and people. And so that's science and that's people. And then I was like, oh my God, even this is like, I didn't want to study like Freud and all. I didn't understand the language of the texts that I was reading. And it felt like really old English that was very hard for me to interpret. And then I ended up taking, because of the college I lived at, I ended up taking a course with Angela Davis and busted my heart wide open. I was like, oh, this is what I need to do. This is like community, and it's studying this country, the history of the land that I'm living on currently. I'm not like stretching to try to like find out my culture and my heritage and like figure out a way to bring that in. It's like I'm studying the land I live on right now. And so then I became a community studies major, and you get to choose a focus. And I focused in arts and politics was really the beginning of my journey. And I didn't really tell my parents until probably my like junior year, you know. My parents were very busy running a restaurant. And so I think they were just happy that I was taken care of. I was a good kid, you know, staying out of trouble. So I didn't tell them until like my junior year about what was really going on in my life. But I ended up graduating early because I changed my major so many times that had all these qualifying units, got to go to New York City as a part of my major and got into the hip hop community. Then I was exposed to the arts, started rapping, taking my poetry to the next level. And I just started becoming an activist, hardcore activist, became the president of my university, like started heading Women of Color Caucus, the Women's Caucus, National Caucus, and just started exploring that avenue of things. And I started exploring how can I change the system from within. I really wanted to see, because as an activist, I was hungry and not in good health and poor. And I just was like, this is not supporting like the lifestyle that I desire. So I thought, okay, maybe I need to go into this route of changing the system from within. So I became a teacher, you know, and then I just started this whole path of kind of entering in the system and trying to change it from within. And then recently came to this huge realization that it's still the system. You know, it's still the system. You know, you go in wanting to make change, but the higher you go and the closer you get to making change, you get really aware you're in the system. Mm-hmm. And the system is deep. And the system of education specifically that I could speak to, its roots are corrupt. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe transformed, and we've seen different iterations and mutations, and we have private schools and charter schools and Montessori schools and all these different approaches, but it's still a part of a much larger system that's really not here to serve a spiritual purpose and path that is completely outside of that realm. So I've been spending a lot of time reversing my education and re-schooling myself through spirit. And I've always done that on the side as a child of my mother, who's always like, you know, taught me yoga and always the spiritual texts. But I always kept that as a hobby because growing up in Santee, you know, that made me different. And so I kept it as a secret. My close friends knew about it. And when they come to my house, they, you know, do chants with me and my family. And parents had an Indian restaurant that served healthy Ayurvedic food. So they would come, and all my birthday parties were there. So my close friends were exposed to that. But it's always been a secret. So, you know, these last 2 years has really been about me coming out of my Indian closet, I like to say, where I'm just trying to own who I am and fully. And it's, I'm not going to say it's easy. It's definitely challenging because it's in a time of a fast food attitude in the West of yoga, where, you know, you're getting parts and pieces of a much larger practice, meaty practice. And so finding my way in terms of creating financial abundance and security from something that's so deep inside of my heart, and finding a way to bring that to the people that resonates with them, but that's also respectful interaction and an inter-exchange of knowledge.
Wow. There's so many things I want to talk about. I guess I liked that what you just said toward the end there about the last few years being a time of coming out of the Indian closet. It resonates with me growing up in a mixed household. Just the feeling, like it would come as a surprise to people to maybe know what an effort it is, I think, for a mixed person to own like parts of their culture, if you've grown up with like hiding being role modeled to you for like potentially many generations, and that's even to label it hiding would be kind of an evolutionary step, because if it's all you've ever known, that's just being. So to actually get the clarity and distance to say, no, that's not just being, that's hiding, that's a strategy, and I want to express the essence of this culture, like it does feel like, it feels like coming out all the time. And in the same way as like, you know, when is the proper time to tell someone, like, especially if you just present a certain way, like, what is the proper time to tell someone, let's say if I was in a relationship with a man, hey, you know, I also like women, you know, like, like if it's too soon, then, you know, it's presumptuous. And if it's too late, then it seems like deceitful. And I feel similarly about like being Puerto Rican, and especially like the traumas related to that. It's like, if I wait too long in a relationship, then I don't ever feel like those parts of me are accepted as like real. It's like, oh, I know the real you, and you're just like me in these other ways. It's just, you know, true to a certain degree. But yeah, I think that's useful language that maybe might be useful for a lot of mixed people. It's just that that it might feel like you have to come out of the closet like again and again about this part of who you are in order to feel expressed and authentic. Thank you.
Totally.
I was going to ask you if there was anybody in your household that was a serious yoga practitioner, either like with asana or the philosophy. And you did mention that you were able to learn from your mother, which is wonderful. I was curious about whether or not the idea of Kundalini was discussed in your household growing up.
It's a really good question. So recently I've really just owned the sensuality, personal sensuality, and just who I am sexually, sensually, because I grew up in a Hindu household. And this is like something really important and a really good distinction to make, you know, because I think culturally what we've done due to patriarchy is so much of, and I can only speak really for myself, so much of what's been passed down is kind of like a denial, right? Like, oh, we're, you know, certain religious Hindu religious practices that since I was a child, I'd be like, but why? Like, why? Why can't I do that? Why am I not allowed? Why? And it'd just be like, okay, that's just what it is. Oh, when you're on your cycle, you can't do this, you can't touch that. And I'm like, but why? I'm not like, is it because you think I'm dirty, or because I'm not dirty? There's nothing dirty about this. Or, you know, don't speak about your menstrual cycle in front of your father or your brothers. And I'm like, but why? That's why I'm in a bad mood. Like, everybody should know, like, don't fuck with me right now, because I'm like a catty bitch, and it's because I'm bleeding, and it's okay. Like, that's what happens. My body is processing, and I always wanted it to be understood and heard. And it was kind of like, that's inappropriate. Shh, shh, shh. But then on the other side, it was like, let's chant and pray together in the morning, where I'd be like opening and feeling these like portals of existence and access to all this universal love. And then you go downstairs and it's like, serve your father first, serve your brother first. You cook the food. You do, you know, these roles that didn't equate, you know? So I think my mother is a product of that, of her navigating her spirituality in the in the context and realm of having an arranged marriage, of, you know, being with the first man that she, you know, I mean, somebody chose for her due to their astrological charts. And that was my mom's way of coping and dealing. And then she passed that to me, or tried. And then, you know, my soul received that in a certain way. And I really feel that it's really up to me to actually heal the ancestral patriarchy that's been passed down generation to generation. Mm-hmm. So yes, my mother was definitely my first yoga teacher. You know, we did Surya Namaskar every day in the morning. And my mother taught me how to meditate, you know, when I even remember in Chicago before going to school in kindergarten. You know, I had my Japmala, and she put me in front of the puja. And the Japmala is just that 108 beads, and the puja is a, you know, the sacred altar. And while she got ready, she would just say, you know, sit and see if you can chant this name over and over again. And, you know, that was like really my practice. And I learned, she would sit with me and teach me the chants. And she did all of this beautiful work. I think a lot of it was also because it made me very marriageable.
Mm.
You know, an Indian girl that was religious and could cook. And I think that's also why I was encouraged to go into the arts. You know, this is like creating kind of like a beautiful wifey resume. And what ended up really happening was I took to it like nobody else's business. Like, I was like, oh, this is the real deal. Like, I'm going to dig deep and go as far as I could go. And it ended up making me question everything. I think once I got deep into the spiritual realms of it all, you know, so we're growing up in my parents' restaurant too. You know, I would make it a spiritual, how I clean the tables was a spiritual practice, finding love and joy in everything. Even if it wasn't like what my heart's desire was, my coping mechanisms, like, and I started to see like, wow, this is what women have done throughout time, is like, we are put into these structures that were not created by us. And then we have to find these practices to make them empowering to live and exist within these structures. And a lot of religious practices and a lot of practices that we do are, it's like our coping mechanism. But if we stripped all of that away, we're actually truly just wild spirits that deserve to be nurtured and grown for our purpose. And everybody's purpose is different. I also believe that, you know, I believe that we have spirit, but our soul has age, and every soul that comes to this planet has a different age. And so like, you could be born into your family, but your soul may be older than your father's and your mother's. And so then you're born into a family because you have to, in the human form, you've got to experience that dynamic of being raised by parents who might have a different understanding of soul and their age. And so then that helps inform you in doing your work. And so it's kind of this whole idea of like, medicine is in the poison, that I'm really working through right now. Like, the things that I've been dealt with in my life to this point is really for me to search for that medicine. So I was like, oh, I was born into this dynamic of Indian culture and being born as a girl and a first generation American, so that I could search to find the opening portal of like universal love and consciousness. And I'm given that experience so that now I can relate to more people and more women and my nieces and my nephews, and kind of begin to help guide them in this patriarchal world. I don't know, that's kind of a long answer to a question of, you know, Kundalini, right? So let me get to that Kundalini thing. I think that my exposure to Kundalini was never the label Kundalini. You know, I went to my first yoga class in college, and I didn't realize that there was more poses than the Surya Namaskar. And I was like, what? What is this? And what really tripped me out was the other poses were all the poses I learned as a classical Indian dancer. And so I was like, why didn't my dance teacher ever tell me I was doing yoga? You know, because yoga is not like that in India. It's not like, okay, everybody, we're going to do our yoga. It's like, it's a way of life, right? Mm. Like, you go, you donate at the temple, or you help somebody out. You know, you do your karma yoga, you do your bhakta yoga by, you know, doing your prayer and supporting the elders. you know, you're doing all different types of yoga and yogic practice, but it's not like, are you spending an hour meditating? Are you spending an hour doing a physical asana practice? And so it like really blew my world wide open. So the first time I even heard Kundalini was probably in my 20s. And I was like, oh, is that what I've been feeling? That good feeling that I get when I'm in the zone, you know? And then I started, you know, taking different classes and exploring that. But, you know, I had always known, and I think that this was from spending just a lot of time since I was a child with myself doing breath work and doing things like that. I always knew that the knowledge isn't from outside of myself. That knowledge of Kundalini, that knowledge of Tantra, the knowledge of Hatha Yoga, all of that, if I sit long enough and ponder and contemplate the inner workings of my being, the answers will come to me. We label it whichever way we want. Some people will say that's orgasmic. Some people will say that's Kundalini. You know, Kundalini, technically in the Sanskrit text, it's a very tantric practice. And Kundalini Yoga was brought by a Westerner who went to India and came here and started a practice of his own. But if you go into Sanskrit text, you're not going to find Kundalini Yoga. Mm-hmm. Kundalini exists everywhere. Kundalini is ignited. It's released. It exists within all of us. And if we choose to, we allow it to unfold in every moment. And that's just our own personal commitment to ourselves. You know, we have this thing in the West, I feel, of like, you have to go to a certain amount of school, or you have to do a certain amount of trainings to be a master of something. I agree with that. But I also feel like in the world of spirit, it's an unfolding. The school that you attend is the school of your life. And if someone chooses to write a book about it, beautiful. But once we put that spirit into word, we unfortunately, somehow that puts a power play into place of now I am knowledgeable and you are not. And what I'm truly trying to help people see is we're all knowledgeable on such a deep, innate level that if we can get into that place of an inner knowing of our life and our life force and why we were brought to this planet, Kundalini is accessible to anyone and everyone, and you don't have to go to a yoga class for it. It might be called something different in cultures all around the world.
I love that reminder. That is kind of I feel like the place where my spirit dwells is in that concept of, and it might be called something else in your culture, and in finding those translations and having that moment of like, of deep understanding of something like really that maybe before seemed vast and totally different. Yeah. Like when you arrive at that congruity, that's my like presence or like experience of divinity for sure. Thank you. I was asking about your historical relationship to the concept of Kundalini because you have this collaborative offering called Hip Hop Kundalini, which sounds super fun. And also, like, it makes sense to me that that would be a really powerful way to move energy. And, you know, for a lot of us, like, the energy that combination of hip hop and Kundalini would be moving it from my perspective, that sort of like lower chakras energy, like might have been stagnant for a really long time. Mm-hmm. So there's even a sense of like, whoa, like that, I'm going to go at some point, but I'm going to like be ready to like deal with some of my stuff. And I might, you know, I probably wouldn't just drop by on my way to a birthday party or something. But I'd just love to hear you talk about how that offering evolved and like who you collaborate with and why it feels like such a relevant pairing for you to bring together your history with the hip hop communities and then your experience of Kundalini. And then especially just wanting to hear like, why is it that you feel moving Kundalini energy to be important, because it's something where a lot of women have spontaneous massive experiences. And that's like a huge part of what I do in one-on-one work is integration of spiritual experiences where people are like, I can't talk to anyone else about this. I'm having crazy dreams about like jacking off this huge light body penis and like with the earth. And you know, like things where they're just like, what do I do? I'm losing my mind.
That was pretty amazing.
Right. And like a lot of times I'm like, congratulations, like welcome. You've arrived. This is the place where people read books and take practices and spend thousands of dollars searching the world to try to have a direct embodied experience of these spiritual realities that they've heard about, and you're there. And they're usually people don't want to hear me be like happy for them. They're like, no, this is horrible. So kind of wanting to honor that, like it can be really scary for people. And you know, maybe they call it something else, like you said, but I might be like, oh, it sounds like some Kundalini awakening might be happening. And most of the time people are just like, how do I turn it off? That's like the biggest thing that I hear is just like, you know, even if it feels great, they're like, well, I'm like just having orgasms in my bed all night and I need to work. Yeah. I need to go to my job tomorrow and not be like having an orgasm in front of a bunch of 10-year-olds at work.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
So because I hear so much of like people's direct experience of Kundalini being like, why would I want this? I'm wanting to hear your like, you know, direct perspective on why it might be helpful to someone to have a container, have an environment where they can see what might be there for them in that realm.
Gosh. Yeah. Those are, this to me is like the source of all work. I think sensuality is huge. And I think I don't even want to say I think anymore. I know we live in a world that, and this is largely in due to patriarchy, liberated women are powerful. We create human beings and give birth to those beings, right? We seek out partners of lifetimes and our souls meet people in order to implant us and give birth to new souls on this planet for a reason. I mean, women are powerful. And when we can own that power, magic happens. And so the real basis for me and foundation of Kundalini is really embodying that divine creative energy. And when I call it creative energy because it's a part of creation, right? And the lower chakras, chakra 1, 2, and 3, right? If we were going to place the numbers to them, or if we're saying Muladhara, Svadhisthana, and Manipura, right? These chakras are the foundation of our existence. You know, first chakra is, who am I? What was I here to do? A lot of times you hear people say, oh, it's like, yes, it's your genitals, or you man, woman. Oh, for me, it's the root. The reason it's called the root chakra is it's like, how do you root to this earth? Each step, your journey, how are you manifesting your purpose on this planet? It's the root. It's beyond gender. You were born into a body for a reason. You're born into a male body or a female body, or a female body that wants to be a male body that wants to be a female body. And then you have all these second chakra wants, desires, and needs that are independent of what anybody tells you. Those could be your sexual wants and desires and needs. But again, we live in a world that when we hear the word sexual, we think sex, we think fucking, we think dick, pussy, vagina, penis. And that is not sexual. If it could be seen more as sensual and creative, it takes a whole new meaning. And third chakra, your solar plexus of I can, I will. So it's like, what are you willing to do to awaken your desires in your purpose on this planet? That's the basis of the lower chakras. And the reason they're there and they're intermixed and intermingled with our genital area is because that is how we create. Not only do we create life from that area, but that's where the womb exists. And the womb space isn't just to carry a child. It's where ideas are created from those three chakras. So if we can understand the interplay of those three chakras and our soul and our spirit, that's where we can start to become in alignment with who we truly are. And that's where the tantric practices really are rooted, of honoring who you truly are, being in alignment with what you want. And that is divine source. You know, the Hindu religion and the Hindu philosophy and this goddess work, we have archetypes, right? We have Durga, we have the nine goddesses under Durga, we have so many rituals. We have Naikas, we have Devdasis, we have so many different sects of goddess work, and sects meaning S-E-C-T-S, of goddess work. These are all manifestations, I believe, of women throughout time exploring this concept of who they truly are. So hip hop kundalini is what, with the foundation of the work, is aligning the elements of creation to the elements of hip hop. And through the practice of kundalini and creativity, we begin to recreate meaning for ourselves. So give you a quick synopsis. We have the elements of earth, air, fire, water. Okay, so we just take those four elements, and then we take the elements of hip hop, which is the MC, the DJ, graffiti, and the B-boy and the B-girl. So the fire is the MC, and graffiti is the water. Earth is the B-boy and the B-girl, and air is the DJ. And what happens is we work through how hip hop came out of a struggle to be seen. It came from this land that we live on, from the Black community, of not being heard, of their culture being stripped away, of their language being stripped away, right? On the history of slavery, and how hip hop came from a new creation, a new code of survival and thriving. So how do you take, you take lemons and you make lemonade, kind of an idea, but how that's all quite spiritual, and how that's ever evolving and happening in all of us, that we can learn from hip hop and we can learn from the arts, is constantly taking what is our experience. We understand our boundaries and these boxes we're put into. And then how do we take that understanding and step out of the box to create something new that represents who we are? So, for example, we start with the element of water, and we talk about graffiti, and we compare it to vandalism. We say, you know, we have first vandalism, and vandalism are the thoughts, are the false belief systems that we've been raised in. And so we do a lot of work with going through our childhood and the inner child, child wounds, things that happened between 5 and 10, where we were told, you can't dance. You're not a good singer. You're not good at art. You know, white people can't jump. I don't know. You know, your English isn't the way you speak. And these, or your parents tell you girls do this and boys do that. Girls like boys, and all these different false belief systems that are culturally passed down. And we really take a look at those. But the way we take a look at those, it's not like we're like, okay, everybody, therapy 101. We actually write poetry. We just start to write. It's just a free form of writing of what's going on in your life right now. What are the things that are coming, you're coming up against, that are stopping your creative flow right now? Let's just label them. Let's place them out there. And we label that as, that's vandalism of the mind. Mm-hmm. That's vandalism of the mind. Those are your own creations that are limiting yourself. It's limiting source from being able to access those first through three chakras to really start to hibernate and collectively create. And then we teach, how do we take, oh yeah, go for it.
I just wanted to, I got excited that you're saying this, because I've actually been in Oracle space doing a reading for someone and seen their book of life and seen that there was vandalism in their book of life, like red spray paint that was like over their Akashic record, that it said, "Shit on everything good," signed the Romans. Like, in their Akashic record. So you're absolutely so onto something here with this, like these things that we do, you know, self-destructive tendencies, intrusive thoughts, that it is vandalism of our minds.
Totally. Wow. And until we change the meaning, till we change that meaning, right? We've got to shift how it occurs for us. So, you know, the thought of, I'm not a good singer, understanding, where did that come from? Where did that thought first come into my being? I can't write, or I can't start my own business, or I don't know how to attract my love. I'm not good at that. I'm not good at relationships. These just blanket statements of I'm not good at, I can't. Where do they come from? In order to shift that, we try to explore shifting vandalism of the mind to graffiti of the heart. So taking that and making it something beautiful instead of like, I'm always sick. Like, so for me, that's another part of my healing journey of health is like, kind of always have had health concerns and health issues and really working on healing myself outside of the Western medicine or integrating Western medicine with my own remedies and such, right? So instead of being like, I'm always sick, to I'm healing. I'm working on healing. I'm healing. My knees are getting stronger. You know, my kidneys are thriving. You know, figuring out these ways to change vandalism of the mind to graffiti of the heart, because then we can start to activate meaning in the body. And that is what starts to create the magic. And so from the water, we then travel into the fire. So once we do that, now it's like we take what we've written and we start to practice speaking, because speaking is the declaration. And that's where the magic occurs, is speaking graffiti of the heart. And you now you begin to recode all meaning around you by speaking that. So we practice freestyling. And freestyling is a whole unique expression, because you're not reading something you wrote. You wrote it, so it's processing inside of you. But now it's like we create a circle, a cipher. It's a womb, a safe space. And we help people begin to speak their mind and drop it. And when you try to drop it in a creative way to a beat, now you're integrating sound. You're integrating vibration. You're integrating the other people in the group. And so it's allows this pretty dynamic force of nature that occurs, where people are like, oh, I don't know, I can't rhyme, or I can't. We're like, whatever, just put it out. You know, we do word association exercises and just ways for people to get creative with sounds and words and what comes to their mind. And then from there, we go into the earth element, which is my part, right? And that's the Kundalini. And that's where we now begin to take what we've practiced in our mind, graffiti of the heart, spitting fire, dropping words of knowledge, and now to embodying that. So we do some pranayama, kapalabhati, breath of fire, some breathing strategies, to guided meditation, to allow inner child work to happen, to start to activate the body. So, you know, we want to integrate all parts of our being. And so then we do some directed movement, some classical Indian dance practices of, you know, showing nature, all the elements of nature and honoring that. And then also free movement, what comes to you naturally, not choreographed. What does the cells, body cells speak? Let the body speak. Let the mind be a witness to the body. And then we end with an energy healing pranic session with the fourth member of our crew. And what he does is he's an energy healer. And we sit and we do breath work with each other with some Qigong and just projection of energy. And that's the DJ. He's a remix. He remixes everything that we've brought to it, and we integrate it all. And so by the end, you feel the elements of creation, but then also you've harnessed your own creative being. And our goal is really that people walk out and they go write that book they've always wanted to write. They go start that business that their heart's desire. What was their heart's desire that they have not felt access to? And for me, you know, all spiritual religious lineages comes to being, doing what you were born to do. Mm-hmm. So Hip Hop Kundalini is, for me, I'm exploring this concept that I'm trying to create and put out there of creative consciousness. You know, the more we can develop our own creativity, we can actually heal the planet. The more we walk in our truth as creative beings and accept one another for who we are, we can actually heal the planet by just loving each other for that. So I love the crew, and it's interesting. Who are the collaborators? So Sol, who is an amazing poet, and he also works with gemstones and jewelry, and he's also a relationship empowerment coach. And we work with Kiyoshi, who is a rapper and a yogi, and So he helps with the freestyling. And then Shofar is the energy healer, and Hip Hop Kundalini is actually his baby. That when we got together, we were like, my education background and doing workshops and trainings, we kind of were able to like synchronize his content and create it together. And what he is he's an energy healer, and he uses tantra to pretty much support the divine feminine. So at the basis of all of this, it's living life orgasmically. You know, we might not put that on the flyer, because when people hear the word orgasm, they think masturbation and sex. Mm-hmm. But the whole idea is, if you could live life in the fullest expression of yourself in each moment, you could actually live orgasmically. Mm-hmm. And I think that what happens in the bedroom, or how we tend to see it, is really what people experience when they, what we see and what we label as orgasm. It's a taste of what's accessible in all parts of life. I'm so curious to hear like your thoughts about that, the orgasmic living, and because I know that you also do work around this, and you do so much work with women and the divine feminine.
I definitely don't actually use the word like orgasm or orgasmic like in my own work. Like, it doesn't naturally occur to me. And I feel like I understand how you're using it and it makes sense to me. But what I experience a lot is, you know, if women are going to ask about that at all, because usually there's a few more things in the way. Like, I can't even say no to my partner when I don't want to be having sex. Like, there's more pressing things before their pleasure, like what they would be a yes to, is even like part of the discussion. But then if they do get to the point in a workshop or in a session where they are like, okay, yeah, and like, how about those orgasm, elbow orgasms I hear about? Like, how do I have those? And I actually struggle to address that, because the concept like exists in a different paradigm of sexuality than I exist in. So it's like speaking a language that's not your first language. I'm like digging around for like, what's the word for apple? I know this, and it takes me forever. But I kind of see it as that the concept of what most people mean when they say orgasm, it feels to me like it requires a ton of focusing and harnessing. So it feels like kind of like a masculine form of magic, where you're like pulling on all these elements and thoughts and things that happened to you as a kid, and, you know, something someone said and something you saw that was sexy, to like, to play your inner chemistry and get the perfect combination of chemicals to like, while you're simultaneously condensing all that energy and like pushing it toward your genitals and focusing like only on your genitals. So it just feels like this hugely effortful, like squeezing kind of a thing to have an experience that, like, yeah, if you've never had a genital orgasm, I'd say it's, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's on your bucket list for this life. It's a cool thing about having a body. It's cool. But like, it's not that interesting to me. Once I like kind of just really got in touch with like what my like erotic innocence or like sexual authenticity looked like, it's something that would not be recognized as sexual by most people, and would be, like you were saying earlier, more just like sensual. And I'm more interested in like taking all that energy that's getting like forced or like efforted toward the orgasm, the genital orgasm box, and saying, you know, what if you just were more curious about where all that energy is diffused in your life and supporting it and being there and facilitating your energy to flow through your realm in its natural way, and being curious of your energy. If, let's say, since you're talking about the elements, if you're more of a fiery person or you're more of a watery person, it's like, if there was a fire in your ecosystem, where would it go? What would it burn? Would it be a big bonfire? Would it be a forest fire? Or if it was was like, you're more of a watery person. Like if you had a torrential rainstorm, if you dumped a bunch of water in your ecosystem, where does it go? Because I feel like it, your sexual energy or your arousal or whatever illuminates your flow and your pattern, and your pattern, like that's your actual body. And I find it much cooler to be studying the actual size and shape of my energy body beyond this form, that's part of this form, but also beyond it, than to try to get all that energy into my physical body's genitals, which I feel is what's required to have a genital orgasm. And and it also takes me away from, if there happens to be another person in the moment, like takes me away
from
being
there. Are they
present? Yeah. So I'd much rather like kind of slowly introduce them to different areas of my realm through the acts of intimacy than to like kind of in a way cease to focus on the co-creation and just focus on my own like achieving of this experience. Like it's just not my favorite way to do it.
Yeah. And I, you know, you bring up such, it sound, it's, it resonates with me so much because I definitely also hear a lot of that. And it's really about the meaning that we place even on the word orgasm and defining that, you know, so redefining sexuality as sensuality.
I hear you using the word in what I would say is a more accurate way. And like, like I feel the translation is happening in real time where I feel like when you say orgasmic living, you're saying in a different way, like just like, how
but it's taken me too, girl. Like, oh, you know, if we had a longer podcast and I could go through my stories, I'm sure, man, the sexual stories and me exploring and trying to figure all of that out, you know, as a woman, and also not really having an elder talk to me and nurture me and guide me through any of these rites of passage. You know, it's something that we really lack. You know, what you get a sex ed course in school, that what does that really prepare us for, right? And it's like to even talk or want to bring up ideas of sexuality, like even in my household, you know, it wasn't that like open. So I didn't really grow up in that. But then as being a very sensual being, that was something. And then being an Odissi dancer, which is a very sensual classical Indian dance, that it's not taught that way, that you're being sensual. But as I was dancing, these things were naturally opening inside of me. And I had to navigate and explore all of that. And then I would start to have experiences where partners would tell me like, whoa, I'm feeling this. And I've never felt this before. And wanting to be like, okay, how do I bottle that? And like, I want to share this and I want to explore this, but then being called cheap or a whore or a freak, and realizing, well, this is just actually a creative expression of myself and my being. But I live in a world that has created these patriarchal constructs and limitations of my energetic body and has defined me and labeled me by the color of my skin and the shape of my body to be acceptable or not acceptable to be able to do this type of work. You know, it's like, oh, to be seen as a sensual, sexual person, we're constantly inundated with these images. And as dancers, oh, the world, it's like, what's your body type and your shape? And like, you know, living in New York, I worked for a dance company and being told I was overweight constantly. And then, you know, dating, having different relationships where, you know, being men who look really good and wanting me to lose weight, or, you know, and then trying to be set up in marriages, being too dark, being too short, being too loud, you know, it's like, you know, how can I just be the fullest expression of myself?
I feel that that's a question that naturally leads to what I call Tantra. And again, like the people might call something else, just like the arts. But right. If you're really asking the question, like, how can I be the fullest expression of myself? The fullest expression of ourselves encompasses our ancestry, encompasses our higher self, encompasses our goddess, like, oversoul. And so we can't be the fullest expression of ourselves without also like embodying goddess. And so I'm curious, I have some ideas, of course, but I'm curious to hear what goddesses or goddess, if you feel like there's a main energy or like that comes through when you're really channeling or when you're really feeling expressed.
Mm. So I was actually born September 21st, which is a really special time for the seasons and harvesting and fall. I was born under No Durge, which is the 9 days of the goddess Durga. And so my mom, since I was a child, was always like, wow, you were born in that time, like you have to honor the goddess Durga. And so, you know, every year I would do the fasting, I would do the rituals, the sadhanas for her with my mom. And I just did them because I was told to do them, right? And that's kind of what happens with religion. It's like an opening pathway. And then at some point you're like, you become a spiritualist. That's what I've noticed happens for a lot of folks. Like you start to realize like, it's just the appetizer. And so I did that. And so when I dance and express, you know, Durga's definitely come to me. I have to say that what I really believe is that we have access to all goddesses, all devis and devas, you know, the archetypes at all times. I've also really gotten deep into Afro-Brazilian dance and some Afro-Cuban and the Orishas. And so that was kind of really the last course I taught with Movement Medicine School, was taking the Hindu gods and goddesses and comparing them to Ifa and the Orishas. And you'll see there's so many similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And in dance. So then we would talk about that, relate that to our lives in present day, but then learn the dance movements from the classical Indian dance and then the Afro-Cuban and Afro-Brazilian dance styles. And then at the end, we create that ourselves. So now take those movements and improvise them. So, you know, Kali might use the Vrishila Mudra, you know, representing past, present, future, creation, destruction, preservation. And Oya uses the winds of destruction, and they both actually stand guard at the cemetery of where things fall to the ground so that things can be created new. So I think when I dance, it really depends on a couple of things. One, myself. What I am experiencing in that moment is crucial. So being really understanding if I'm in performance mode, or am I in party mode? Am I in spirit mode? And what I've come to now is it's all spirit mode, as long as it's what my true desire is.
Mm.
Once I channel in, I am in spirit mode, and then I see the environment that I'm in, the people, the space, and I begin to channel the vibrations of the people. And what do I feel? And then it's sound. What's the sound of the space? Am I in nature? What is nature telling me? Is there a DJ? Is there a live musician? And I call them in. And then I ask Source to show me. And whoever comes, comes.
Hmm.
Whoever comes, comes. Hmm. Saraswati is the goddess of arts and culture. But a lot of times I feel Kali because I'm dancing through some fucking shit that needs to just crumble. And I'm feeling like when I'm with people, a lot of times I'm dispelling their fears, their hesitancies to come out on the dance floor. And my job is usually to create a space to invite them in. I want community. I want to create tribe. And so Kali comes through to take away all their inhibitions, all their definitions of what does it mean to be a woman? Oh, girls don't move that way. Should I move that way? Oh, now I've had some drinks. Now I can like shake my ass. Now I can twerk. When it's like tribes have been doing that for centuries. We don't need liquid courage. If you feel that, you feel it and you do it, right? So a lot of times I feel Kali coming in there. You know, once everybody's in and I'm like master of ceremonies, I start to feel a little bit more Lakshmi of abundance and not financial abundance, but abundance of financial abundance. The source of Lakshmi is the earth, because coin and paper, where do they come from?
Mm-hmm.
Metal and paper, they're manifestations of the earth, right? Our harvest that makes us quote unquote money is manifestations of the earth. So then creating that abundance. And so whatever Kali chooses to destruct, we compost that into the soil of our beings, use that as compost, and Lakshmi emerges to, you know, create abundance, vibration, and energy. Oshun, bringing that honey, bringing that beauty. And, you know, a lot of times, even before Kali can come, when you enter a scene, you want Ganesh to come through to remove obstacles that are not allowing me to see people in their realest form. So I'll ask Ganesh, Eshu, Elegua, come, clear, we're at the crossroads here. Which way will I choose to go? Am I going to choose to present myself? Am I going to choose to be a witness? When and where? Show me the signs. Clear the paths. Remove the obstacles, those false belief systems. Remove them for myself so that I can be fully present. So the different archetypes are in us at all times. The management of our emotions is harnessing those gods and goddesses to come and appear. So for me, Tantra helps me understand the fullest expression of myself. And Kali is the mirror of like the false belief systems. Mm. And I have to integrate her. So how you're talking about like integrating all the gods and the goddesses and all of that, it's also like integrating the shadows, integrating Kali, integrating Oya, so that when I'm in a full expression of myself, I'm also relatable to my peers and my tribe. That there is no setting apart of I'm teacher, you're student, but more like we're all on this path together. And I notice the more I integrate my shadow, which I'm working on a lot right now, and my past, these stories, these ongoing mind things, the more I'm learning to integrate that when I dance, I'm noticing a lot more ancestral presence and a lot more divinity, you know. I've stopped cutting off parts of my life that doesn't serve me. No, that wasn't good. That violation of my body, that abuse because I was a woman. Oh, the cultural upbringing that didn't allow me to like do X, Y, Z. You know, for the longest time, it was like fighting that as a feminist, like fight, fight, fight. And now what I'm really coming into is integrate, 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 actually compost, use that as my essence of my soil. And I have way more access to gods, goddesses, and visions that are mind-blowing. You know, I'm way more open. The more open I'm becoming to myself, I'm noticing I'm way more open for others. So dance is a private practice, but ultimately it's not about me. Ultimately, it's a service. So I'm an instrument of the divine. I'm an avatar.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many more things I want to ask you about, but that just means you'll have to come back if you like.
I will. I would love to.
I would love to just hear where folks can learn more about your offerings and your work.
Sure. So on Instagram, I am dilse.kirthidance. And my website is dilseculture.com. And the word dilse means from the heart. And so everything I do is dilse dance, dilse cooking, dilse healing energy work, dilse movement medicine. So everything is really from the heart culture. And I really hope that this podcast reaches the people who need to hear this, because ultimately I believe I know that my purpose on this planet is to inspire and motivate women and the divine feminine in men to come together to create a synchronicity of understanding and full expression of our beings and an owning of our truest desires. And so I hope whoever hears this, if it resonates and it aligns with themselves, I want people to walk away realizing that this knowledge is accessible at all times. This concept that I'm talking of, orgasmic living, it's just an unfolding. We can call it Kundalini. We can call it life force, spirit, but living life in your fullest expression. You know, I would really like folks to just allow the unfolding. And I think that the magic that occurred here between you and I, just with creative flow and conversation. I really appreciate it first and foremost. So thank you for that, because space like this is needed. It's a revolutionary act, what you're doing with your podcast, by the way. I love listening to it.
Thank you.
And I also really appreciate, as an Indian woman, your respect for the culture and spiritual practices from India. Thank you for that as well. You interview really quality people who have honored these practices. So I'm going to say thank you for that as well. But the magic that's happening here, those who listen, what I'm hoping for and what I'd like to activate for them is an unfolding immediately after this podcast, where Divine Source can show herself to them and help them see their path in this lifetime.
This for the good of all and according to the free will of all, it is pleasing to Goddess, then may it be so.
May it be so.
Formal thank you to you, Kirti, and all the benevolent beings in all the realms that have gathered with us today to inspire the flow of this conversation. We dedicate any merits accumulated through this work to the benefit of all sentient beings. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be well. May all beings know joy and not suffer. Jai Ma, Hey Man, Namaste, Blessed Be Aho. It is finished in beauty, Tainoti.
Tatastu, Namaste.
Blessings. We're here.